91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's our always popular At Your Service edition, which caters to our beloved pets. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Perhaps you have a lovable, cuddly little mutt who's a bit long in the tooth but the perfect companion and who thinks you're tops. Perhaps yours is an elder discriminating cat who really rules the house, or a kitten cute ball, a fur with devilish energy. We'll spend the hour with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who operates the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, as well as dog trainer and behaviorist Adele Miedes of Canine Advisors. We'll take your questions about the health, behavior, and well-being of many animals. Topical Currents coming up after the news.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Tuesday edition. Bonnie?
Yes?
Well, giving someone a
Our
pet.
Our favorite.
Of course. Okay. Well, giving someone a pet as a surprise gift is an unfortunate idea, but it does happen. Today in our At Your Service Pet Edition, we'll cover how to best cope with the situation in case it did occur.
And we'll touch on other animal issues, and of course, we'll take your calls. We have expert contributors with us this afternoon. First, veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke. He and his other half, Lynn Kupke, have a labor of love and operate the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. Welcome, as always.
Wonderful to be back. Thank you.
The doctor's in the house.
Yes.
And returning with us is dog trainer and behaviorist Adele Miedes. He runs the Canine Advisors firm. He has clear advice on how to have a well-adjusted dog or cat. Welcome to you, Adele Miedes.
Thanks once again. Good to be here.
How about the phone number, Bonnie?
The number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN with your pet questions or...
Email radio@WLRN.org, but give us a call if you can.
Yeah. Now, if you did give or receive a pet during the holidays and you're having a hard time of it, we're not here to scold you, even though we always advise not to do it. We won't scold you. We're here to help you make the relationship work. So again, it's 1-800-743-9576. So, Dr. Kupke, this is a hard time for shelters. A lot of animals get returned.
It is, and as Bonnie said, you know, we're not putting you on the naughty list.
No.
The bottom line is that for many reasons this happens, and the reason why this program's on today is because the return rate for Christmas kittens and holiday hounds is very, very high. Statistics are between 5% and 50% return
50?
Rate. 50. So there's you've got your cat, you've got your dog. What do you do? You're having a tough time. You're thinking of joining that line that's running out the door at the animal control with returning dogs and cats. Well, the first thing is to research the heck out of the breed or breed mix that the dog is, because that can tell you a lot about what to expect in terms of the dog's development. One of the dirty little secrets about raising a puppy is that the puppy stage, for example, with my dog, Zohan, was actually very easy, but when he merged into the adolescent stage, teenage stage, go figure, he was a nightmare for about 12 months.
So it's the terrible teens,
terrible
twos terrible when it comes to an animal.
And there's not, you know, Dogs for Dummies doesn't really cover that. It's something that people aren't prepared for. And a lot of the time, and this is, I'm sure Adele would agree, this is the time a lot of people throw in the towel because they think that they've been doing such a terrific job with training, and then they meet this new developmental stage and they think, oh, I'm a terrible dog trainer. No, you're just getting into that rebellious phase. This too shall pass.
Absolutely.
And that really segues on to the most important point, get a trainer involved before you despair. a lot of the time, Adele spent some time with me with my puppy. And honestly, in an hour, we covered so much and I learned so much. And suddenly there was hope where there was none before.
So. Okay. Like, give us just one example of what Zohan, is that his name?
Yes. It's a silly joke. It's named after the movie, The okay. Zohan. You know, okay. it's because everyone likes to mess with him, if you know the movie. But a classic example was that he was doing very well with the sit command. And then he came to a point where sit actually meant stare at you for 8 seconds and then bolt under the bed and see whether we'd respond or not. And there's a lot of things you can do for that.
So that's, what did Adele do?
Well, over to
specifically.
Adele.
That's right. Oh, Adele, you're here. Hi, Adele.
That's
okay. Okay, what did you do with Zohan to get him to sit?
Well, Zohan knew sit when I met him. He just didn't know to continue. In other words, to stay on the sit until we told him something else. So part of an important thing that we went over was just to teach the dog when he's off the clock. So when you put the dog on a sit and you tell him break or you release him or you call him into another command, the dog knows to wait there until you give him something else, like a release or another command. So, and they did great with that. And, you know, we walked him around. He had an issue with some other dogs and so forth. And he's come around from that rather well. Yeah, of course, not everybody's as proactive as Dr. Kupke and Lynn Kupke. but that's good that it worked out with him.
Yeah, so he's good now. He's out of his...
He's great. He's great. And actually, he's the perfect dog. Actually, I will go on air saying this. He's much better behaved than my first dog, where I didn't get a trainer involved and I raised her myself, and she's, shall we say, a little bit spoiled.
Okay, so get a trainer involved.
Get a trainer.
Can I bring up just one thing on your list? It's number 8, training your pet, but I'm going to make it number 1, which is it's illogical to get angry with your dog and the consequences of getting angry and using physical force. Would you talk about that?
Well, I think we can both have a say for that. But the bottom line, as I understand it, is dogs don't understand that link, that when you get angry with them, they don't see that as a consequence of their behavior. They just see you lapsing into a period of lunacy. So they don't see it as a punishment. They just see it as you going off the rails. And they're bewildered. They're confused. Do you really want a dog that's frightened of you? You know, you've disconnected the communication. And the way I understand it, the biggest punishment you can mete to a dog is to withdraw your favor, withdraw your praise.
And what are the hazards of using your hands to discipline your dog?
Oh, it's very important to never do that. Some people go around following TV shows and poking the dog to get the dog's attention. Yeah. There's no reason to do any of that. As a matter of fact, it actually breaches trust between yourself and the dog. And not only that, the dog may be really good with the family members, but not really trust a new person. Now, a new person goes to pet him around the same area the family member have been poking him, and the dog will bite the person, thinking they're coming in to get poked by somebody they don't even know.
So not even a gentle little whap with a rolled up newspaper or anything?
On you, not the dog. Okay. no reason for that with the dog at all. As a matter of fact, one of the key communication points that we went over in lesson one, I go over with everybody, hands on the dog are only for praise. Yeah. So that means that you shouldn't use your hands to even push the dog off of you if he's jumping up on you. You shouldn't use your hand to grab that collar and pull the dog off a couch. You don't want to do that because the dog is not going to know later on if the hand's coming over for something good or something bad.
So it's confusing.
It's confusing. We gotta keep it really consistent with the dogs, and you get a lot more out of them. Basically, if the hands coming towards them are always for praise, this includes protection dogs that we train. We train full protection dogs, bite on command, hands on the dog only for praise. So you take this dog anywhere, anybody comes from anywhere to pet the dog's going to... Gonna allow it. It's
perfectly
fine.
You're even talking about canine.
Yes, the canine dogs that we work, and the canine is a dog. But yes, the dogs that we work for family and personal protection, we have them so that anybody can come up to them and pet them, and they're gonna be just fine. If the person gives a command, the people are done.
So what if your dog is jumping up on you, and instead of pushing him away and using your hands in a negative
what
force,
do you do?
You should just back up.
What I teach people to do is a little thing called the Elvis Shake. So
you mean with your hips?
It's a little bit with the hips, yeah. A little bit with it works well on small to medium sized dogs. With larger dogs and maybe other things, like for example, you might leave a leash dragging on the dog, and then if you know he's gonna jump up for something like a toy you may hold up high or something like that, then you just step on the leash, and when the dog tries to jump up, he can't. And then once you have him sit, once he sits, and you give him the toy or the item that he wanted.
Well, anything before phones?
Well, I just want to point out this. January is National Train Your Dog Month. I want to know when Train Your Cat Month is.
That's great.
Okay, we can take calls. Yeah, it is. Ha ha.
First up, Walter. He's in Pompano Beach. Hey, Walter.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is about fireworks. My dog is about 18 months old, and she's about 125 pounds, mixed breed. And she's really affected by the noise of fireworks. If we're in the house, she'll crawl in the bathtub and hide. But my main concern is if we happen to be out walking down the street and she hears the noise of fireworks, she just goes berserk, and I'm afraid she's going to slip out of her collar and run away. So we crouch down and we comfort her and we say it's okay, but I've read that maybe that's the wrong thing because it's like we're rewarding her reaction to the fireworks.
Adele?
Yes, we deal with this a whole lot. Immediately, the very first thing is you got to make sure you keep the dog safe. So I would walk a dog like that only on a martingale collar. It's a flat collar that adjusts. If the dog decides to try to pull away, the collar will adjust and not allow, as long as it's sized correctly, it will not allow for the dog to get away. Even some harnesses the dogs get away from. With little dogs that don't wear any collars, we recommend vest type of harnesses that cover more of the body, not the little strappy ones that they can do a little figure eight and stick their elbow under there and get away from. So a larger dog like yours, a martingale collar would be best. That's the first thing. Second, I mean, this varies so much by dog because it depends what motivates your dog. One of the most important things is to find what motivates your dog. If a squeaky toy or a ball or something like that makes her like really go crazy over it, then you want to take some of that on the walk and then try to basically drive her attention or divert her attention away from the sound or that scary feeling she feels when she hears a sound back to something that she likes. You want to try to look at that tail, look at the ears, see if you can get that tail out from between the legs and see if the ears become a little bit more natural and not that pinned back. And as soon as that happens, then you want to praise that. Because if that tail is in and the ears are back and she's all freaking out and you start praising her, she's going to go more and more into that feeling. Mm-hmm. So we want her out of that feeling and then praise that.
Should you isolate your dog in, say, a bedroom on 4th of July or New Year's Eve?
That's really tough. You know, with dogs like this, proactively, you'll want to teach them a safe spot. Now, if you're out on a walk, that's different. You got to try to divert the attention. If you have them inside the house, a lot of times, if you could use a closet with some hanging clothes on plastic hangers so that it absorbs as much of the electrical sounds of thunderstorms and as much of
thunder.
And as much as of the actual impact of a sound. And then have like maybe like one of those travel crates. You have just the bottom part with a thick cushioned type of comforter there. And what you may do, it doesn't always work, but is to play some sounds, which you can download and so forth. You can play some sounds of thunderstorms or fireworks and then play it around that area. Nowadays, little speakers are really powerful, but as powerful as you can. And then when you see that the dog reacts, you teach the dog to go to their safe spot. And you do that over and over again.
What about the thunder shirt? Would that help Walter's dog?
Thunder shirt might help a little bit. In most cases, it definitely doesn't hurt.
Okay.
The thunder shirt concept has been researched quite a bit, and there's definitely proof that when a dog feels just like a person, more comforted, like a big hug, let's say, during a difficult time where their nerves are rattled, it helps them. Unfortunately, for the most part, it doesn't really resolve the issue.
Okay. Walter, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
We're speaking with Adele Mieres from Canine Advisors and Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic. A short break, and we'll come back and take more of your calls. Stay with us.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke and also Adele Miedis. We're taking pet questions. It's Topical Currents at your service. We've been dominated by the canine side. Let's go to Marilyn in Miami. Hi there.
Hi there. I cat sit for a friend who has a cat named Rita, and he has not been able to find any solution to her licking the fur off her legs. He's gone to vet, she's taken medication, and at this point her legs are just bald. And maybe you can give us a hint as to what to do now.
Doctor?
Well, it's hard to know the specifics of what's already been tried.
Well, they've tried tranquilizers.
Before really proceeding, one would have to at least try to assess, is this a psycho-emotional thing where the kitty's over-grooming because of some kind of stressful situation, or whether it's a dermatological issue focused on allergies, usually environmental allergies, sometimes fleas, sometimes not fleas at all, sometimes a mixture of all sorts of other allergens. A lot of the time, a way to differentiate the two is to treat the kitty for allergies and see if the situation temporarily improves. Mm-hmm. And if it does not, then it's probably more on the behavioral side. And then you have to look at environmental issues. What's going on in the kitty's house when is it Rita? Rita?
Rita,
When Rita's alone, unbeknownst to us, is someone practicing saxophone next door? Is there a couple next door arguing? Is there construction going along? All sorts of things can make a cat upset, but I tend to focus on the dermatological first, because you can rule that out pretty quickly by assessing response to treatment.
And I understand what
go
you're
from
saying.
There. Yeah.
But they've tried every angle, including allergies, and she's not really alone. She is with her brother, Felix. They're really alone.
If it is truly a behavioral thing,
then what do you do?
We do actually have a board-certified behavioral specialist up in Broward, who's... I don't have a contact information at the moment, but if you email us, we can email it back. But there's actually veterinary behavioral specialists out there who walk you through that. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, we know about positive reinforcement and all that. But anyway, I don't know. Maybe she will just have bald legs. Could I make another comment, though, about cats?
I just want to give you the doctor's email so you can find out that doctor. It's Ask Dr. K.
K-A-Y?
No, the letter K. Ask Dr. K, as in Kupke, at Sable, S-A-B-A-L, Chase, C-H-A-S-E, animalclinic.com.
Sable Chase. Okay, animalclinic.com. Okay, the comment I wanted to make was that I've had cats, they've all been foundlings, but one of them we were easily able to train to roll over on command. And also to wink. When we would wink, she would wink.
Well, Marilyn, I haven't had that same experience, so I call it... I have never been able to train a cat to do anything, and I've had several. But I have to admit, I've really never tried, so you never know. But thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we have Maria. She's in Pembroke Pines. Hey there.
Hi, good afternoon. The reason for my call, I adopted a 2-year-old black lab about 6 months ago. She's a wonderful dog. She's well-behaved. She's great with the whole family, children, elderly. Excellent. I only have one big problem with her, and is when she sees another dog. I love to go for walks with her. We like to take her to the park, but when she sees another dog, she just growls and barks and charges at the dog. So, you know, we have to be very careful. People are afraid of her because she's big. She's a beautiful black lab. But, I mean, we try different things, but I just wanted to know what should I or shouldn't I do.
The labs are usually so mellow.
They are. She is very mellow. At home, she's wonderful. She's so well-behaved. She's house-trained. As I said, even with my grandchildren, she's wonderful. But don't bring another dog, especially if she's outside. I mean, and on a leash. She just becomes very aggressive and she just charges.
Adele?
All right. Well, immediately we would need to assess if it's really dog aggression. In most of these cases, it's really not. It's more a high level of anxiety that the dog feels, either because the dog has no other sort of interaction with dogs, so they don't know what to expect. So their anxiety about getting to this dog can actually lead to a dog fight. The dog has had bad experiences with other dogs and now feels the anxiety of having to, you know, get in protection mode. So either which way, the very first thing that I would do is use a dog that is a very beta dog and then bring in a dog like this and be able to assess with that dog. And I have dogs to do that with to rule out dog aggression. Now, if it is dog aggression, then we'll treat it differently. But in most of these cases, it's not. And then what we need to let the dog know is, hey, you don't have to worry about the dog. All I have to do is look at me and you get praised. So we go through a little system. Usually it takes me about 15 minutes to really get the dog more focused on me than on other dogs. And then I transfer that over to the owners. It's kind of very difficult to explain this here,
right,
or in person. It's more something that we need to work with the dog first and then work with the person after. But it's very resolvable in all cases.
Good. So it's something that can be resolved.
You can definitely get to walking that dog with a loose leash right by another dog, and your dog doesn't react even if the other dog barks at your dog.
Oh, that, my God. That sounds to me, incredible. If I could do that, because I said, we love to go to park. I have not been able to take her to a dog park. We would love to. Just to be able to walk her, you know, and then when we encounter another dog with another person, not to become so aggressive. I mean, people are terrified of her. So that would be great. So,
well, all of that could get resolved. It's just the whole going to the dog park part that I would not agree with a dog like this that might be reactive.
No, I wouldn't dare. But I'm saying my son has a dog and, you know, he goes with him to the dog park and I've gone with him and I said, oh my God, I wish I could bring mine because they love it, you know, I'd like to get some information from you, or how do I reach you? So,
okay, let me give it to you, Maria. It's Adele, E-D-E-L.
E-D-E-L, uh-huh.
At the letter K.
Okay.
The number 9.
Okay.
Advisors.com.
Okay, very good.
Canineadvisors.com.
And you can look them up online.
Okay, we have to run. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Maria.
Okay, let me just do this. Email, Lewis has 3 cats. 1 cat keeps marking. We've tried everything, including sprays, putting the food where the mark is, and nothing's working. His last sentence, I don't quite understand. Mm-hmm. Should we put them together in a room and let me figure it out? Any ideas?
Well, and in fact, this is one of the points I wanted to raise about Christmas kittens. Litter box protocols, not obvious. There are a few golden rules. 1 litter box per cat plus 1 for the house, absolutely. Regular cleaning of the litter box. I have a very good friend who cleans her litter boxes 3 times a day, and she has many, many cats, and she's never had a problem with marking, because the litter boxes are squeaky clean. Mm-hmm. I have several friends who hate the idea of using a public restroom, so it's a similar concept with a cat. A cat isn't going to use a spoiled litter box. Make sure the litter boxes are sized appropriately for the cats.
Is the cat neutered?
Yeah. Is the cat neutered? Are all the cats in the household
neutered? Are all
neutered?
The cats neutered?
All the cats in the household spayed and neutered? Because 1 tomcat can be a nightmare. And I would start with that first. And if all else fails, get the cat that's marking to a vet, because there might be an underlying medical issue.
Okay, Lewis, good luck with that. And we hope that helps. We're speaking about our pets. We're at your service on Topical Currents with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Miedes of Canine Advisors. We'll be right back.
And we're back with Topical Currents at your service, our weekly, our quarterly pet edition. Maybe we should do it weekly. We get so many calls. Our next call is from Joe. He's in Coral Springs. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
All right, great. Thank you for taking my call. All right, I'll give you a quick status. I've had dogs and cats all my life. Right now, I had a Labrador Retriever that recently passed away, and since then, I've acquired four other dogs.
Oh.
These are all rescue dogs. The three cats are also rescue cats.
Good for you.
There's a turtle named Marco Polo, which we found in the pool, and a rooster that's walking around my house named Reed for some weird reason.
Is Marlon Perkins around there in the Wild Kingdom?
Sometimes I feel like Francis of Assisi. Anyway, here's the deal. The dogs are all great. Charlie, if I passed away, I would love to come back as my daughter's dog. All the dogs are in fantastic health. Everybody's doing great. Charlie is a stuffed animal that came to life. Maddie is a little...
Joe, could you get to your question about the barking dog?
All right. So there's this one dog. Its name is Zoe, and it won't stop barking at me. And I don't know why it won't stop barking at me. I move around my house carefully, and it won't stop barking at me. Now, however, when no one is around and I sit down or I lay down, the dog comes up and curls up with me like nothing's wrong. However, if I get up and move around, the dog won't stop barking at me.
Okay, Adele?
Yes, this is textbook. Two key resources that the leader of the pack controls, food and attention, and your dog owns you with the attention. So, yeah, it's just important that you could sit down and the dog does not jump up on you. And he has to know that there's going to be times that you are going to sit down and lay down and the dog doesn't get to be on you or next to you. He gets to be on the floor like a dog. And then other times you can call him up. So you want to be able to call your dog up when you want its attention and make sure you let him know, I don't want your attention right now. It could be 5 seconds later. But it needs to be that you initiated, not your dog. If your dog keeps initiating the attention, he's going to keep demanding it by continuously barking at you. And you will be looking at him and tell him, no, I'm not going to talk to you right now, but you just did. And so the dog doesn't care what
you
tell him.
So you just ignore it.
You just ignore it. You move away on one side. And on the other side, you do not let him engage you in attention or come and get up on your lap or up next to you on the couch until you call him up. That's really easy to resolve.
So how does Joe get him to stop barking right now?
It follows me around the house and barks at me.
Right.
But when no one else is home, the dog is fine.
There's a number of proactive exercises you can do regarding attention. You can use one of your other dogs and be praising your other dog. You hold your other dog on a leash, and this one here is loose. And you're praising the other dog, and you just turn around continuously, giving the dog that wants the attention your back. And you continue doing this. That dog will continue coming in and coming in for 15, 20 minutes until that dog stays back. He will at one point stay back. When he stays back, you turn around, you praise him, and you do a series of these exercises several times for a few days. And it's one step in getting your dog to understand that you're going to control the attention, not him. But there's a number of things you could do. That's an example of one of them.
Okay, Joe, good luck.
All right, thank you very much.
I hope that helped, Joe.
Okay.
Hey, Bonnie, one quick thing. Grigori Popovich trained cats.
Oh.
So look him up.
Okay. I know who he is. Okay.
You know who he is? Yeah, okay. He's awesome.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. All right, next caller.
Melissa. Miami Beach. Hey there.
Hi. We have a 9-year-old French bulldog who will urinate on the floor every single time we leave him. Whether it's 5 minutes or 5 hours, he will pee on the floor. And we don't really know how to deal with the situation because we don't typically ever catch him in the act. It's just we'll come home and he'll have peed on the floor. And recently, I've noticed he has been choosing to actually pee in his bed, which he then will lay in and sleep in after he has peed in the bed. So we're kind of confused about that and wondering if there's something we can do to stop the behavior.
Has anyone worked him up medically?
Yeah, he has nothing wrong medically.
He's neutered?
He's neutered.
Yeah, yeah. No urinary tract infection?
No.
No, no. One possibility before we look at behavior is to make sure that you get a proper x-ray and preferably an ultrasound to make sure that there is nothing wrong with the bladder itself. There is a condition in dogs where basically something they've had left over from when they were in the mother, a special ligament that stretches the bladder across the abdominal wall and makes it very, very difficult for them to hold the urine in. So I would say a bladder ultrasound to make sure that there's nothing amiss with the shape or function of the bladder itself.
I mean, he can definitely hold it. And certain nights, especially if it's raining because he's such a prima donna, I mean, he'll hold it for 12 hours rather than go out in the rain to go to the bathroom. Yeah. But if you go out the front door, he'll pee on the floor in 2 minutes.
Hmm. Okay, Adele.
Yeah, it does sound like it may be behavioral. we'd have to see a few different things. He's a Frenchie. Frenchies are generally really high drive dogs. I've never met a lazy Frenchie in my life. They're generally very, very, very active, high drive dogs. A lot of times when you get a dog and if you want to resolve the issue, you do some sort of prey-driven reaction work, like a little ball on a string, sometimes one of those little soft-sided frisbees, something that gets the dog chasing something, grabbing it, and you do this over and over again. With a Frenchie short snout, you know, especially in the summer, you want to be careful as far as the heat goes, but you do it over and over again to the point that you know he's really exhausted, and then you actually work him on him staying alone for just a little bit. It's a few seconds at a time, and you do so in a kennel, in a crate that has absolutely no bedding, just a plastic tray underneath. And so you put that, after the dog has been tired off and used up some of his prey drive, then you put him into this little kennel in an area where you can go to another side of the wall. So in other words, all you do is you step around the hallway wall or around the room wall, and you just wait a few seconds, and then you come back and you praise him. And you keep doing this and actually extend out the number of seconds that you wait, and then you just go in there and you take him out. And you give him a little praise, a little treat that's high value for him. If his energy is recouped and he really wants that ball again, use the ball better than a treat, zero calories. So there's different ways that you could that you can start conditioning the dog, but you want to have the dog in a position first, especially with energy used up, before you do that, because he already has high anxiety of you moving away. So getting him a little bit more tired before you do those exercises will help.
Okay,
good luck.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Dr. Kupke, before we take our next call, I'd like you to touch on pet health insurance.
Yes,
with
yes.
The price of veterinarian services, and also how does the age of the pet figure in there?
Well, first of all, the difference between human and pet insurance is that currently pet insurance is something that you buy and then you can take to any vet. So it isn't like the human world where you have to find a vet that takes the insurance you happen to have.
HMO.
And is it based on their age and condition? I mean,
the premium is. Okay. And the other thing to be careful of is that different policies have different terms and conditions. There are some companies that are very generous with the upfront wellness stuff, but tend to disappoint when it comes to covering the more serious major medical stuff. Some companies won't cover certain breed-related disorders, so you want to be careful with that. For example, I have two dachshunds, so there are several companies out there that just weren't even worth my approaching because they wouldn't cover back surgery in a dachshund, which is the most common
always
thing
needs
you
a
get.
Back.
Exactly.
Does insurance cover what Adele does? Behavior? Training?
The answer is no.
Yeah,
but the only ones is a couple of companies that will pay for some of the medication and part of an assessment of a board-certified veterinarian behaviorist,
but
not a trainer behaviorist.
Okay.
But doctor, in general, do you recommend pet insurance?
Well, I do, but one thing I did want to distinguish too, there are a number of corporate veterinary hospitals that run a monthly payment plan that they call insurance. That's a in-company payment arrangement. It's not insurance in the truest sense of the word. That those sorts of arrangements aren't going to help you if your dog has to see a separate neurologist or a separate orthopedist. So what you want to do is stick with companies that are independent of any veterinary practice, so that you can literally go wherever you need to go with your pet. And that, I think that's the most important thing, really. Read the fine print, make sure that you're happy with what's covered.
Are there a few of them that you could mention?
We're with Trupanion. They've treated us well with our dogs.
What's the name of it?
Trupanion, T-R-U Panion. Okay. And they cover dachshunds, which is great. And the thing we liked about them was that they're not... They don't cover a lot of the routine wellness things like dentistry and vaccines, but you don't need an insurance company for that. You need an insurance company for major medical. And so that's the key. And really, we've been happy with the premiums and the coverage. So,
okay, well.
You want to do break or caller?
Let's do a quick email because we don't have time. We'll get to your Rosemary and Tom and Alyssa after the break. Okay, Gary has the perfect dog, except in one way, when he encounters a skateboarder whizzing by, he becomes a possessed demon out to put the rider out of business permanently. I can restrain him, but not when a skateboarder surprises us from behind. I've tried taking him to skateboard parks that were fenced in so he would get used to them, but it didn't work. What should he do?
You know, most of the time, if you have something that triggers the dog to go after something like a skateboard or a car or whatever, and you provide this trigger without anything else, just hoping that you can desensitize the dog from it, generally you're going to get the dog more into that behavior. So just as a general rule, you don't want to just submerge the dog to all this stimuli that is already affecting him without knowing exactly what you're doing with the dog when he does react to that stimuli. So that being said, a lot of times when we work with these cases, first of all, is assessing to what level. We have worked with some serious cases where the dogs see any rolling ball or any sort of rolling wheel, and they freak out and they want to go and attack the wheel. Some of them, it's just because of the movement of the board. So a lot of times what we do is we use a skateboard, and little by little we start desensitizing the dog to it. In one case that we worked on, an English bulldog in Pembroke Pines that was insane on a skateboard, we ended up teaching the dog to use the skateboard, and he really loved it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. That was wonderful. But yeah, there's a number of ways to resolve this, and usually it involves realizing what motivates this dog to be able to get him away from the thought of, I see the skateboard and I have to chase it down. Again, like with the situation with the Frenchies, if we're dealing with dogs that have high prey drive and something moves and they want to go after it, then a lot of times we kind of lure them into a different exercises that can also get some of that prey drive out of them, like, you know, with a frisbee or with a ball, sometimes even bite work, fun bite work. And then basically we have an outlet for that dog, and then we go ahead and we put them with the skateboard going at a slower pace. And we have to kind of assess as we go along to make sure that we get it resolved.
Sounds like so many of these things need a professional behaviorist. You know, it's a little tricky. We're speaking about our beloved animals with Dr. Ian Kupke, Sable Chase Animal Clinic, and Adele Mietes of Canine Advisors. Our last break, and we'll be back and take all your calls and emails.
And it's Topical Currents at your service. Pets with Adele Mietes, dog behaviorist and trainer, and Dr. Ian Kupke from the Sable Chase Animal Clinic. We have a lot of callers and little time, so please be brief. Rosemarie in Margate, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome.
I have a Siamese cat. He's 3 years old. He's been neutered. Whenever I go somewhere, even if it's an overnight, when I come home, he growls at me, shows me his teeth. I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't leave him in the house by himself. My son will come over and stay with him, or my neighbor would stop by, check on him and my little dog. And if I'm gone 3 days, God help me, because he'll come out from under my bed and want to bite me.
Oh. So, Rosemarie, I understand that syndrome. That's why I haven't left my house in 10 years. Just kidding. But no, it's hard.
I never had a cat like that before.
So what do you think, guys?
I don't know. I mean, what do I do? Take him with me? Because
No. Adele?
No, you don't adapt your life to the cat. You know, in a number, I had a couple cases like this, lady in Surfside. If you allow the cat to kind of, you know, let's say own you in that way, a lot of times these cats will actually go and literally you're laying down on the couch and then just go and attack you. I've had a couple cases like that. Something that's really important is people think that cats need to graze. Right, and I mentioned before food and attention being something a leader of the pack controls. Cats are not as much pack oriented as our dogs, but the same concept of a primal resource applies here. And I use that with this case in Surfside. It worked really well. I don't know if this will work with in your case, but a lot of people leave the food out all the time for the cat to have food. If you start letting the cat know that the food's not going to be out there all the time, you're going to put it down. If the cat goes and doesn't eat at all and moves away from it, you take the food up, okay? And you want to do this for a few days before you ever have to leave the house. And the cat should see that it's you that's providing that food, putting it down.
Well, what about when she's out of town?
I leave the food there, even if it's overnight. Christmas Eve, I went up to Jacksonville to go visit my daughter. I flew up because I knew I would be back right away the next day. And he watches, if he sees me take a suitcase out or something or a little overnight bag, he watches and he sits on my bed. I have to put it in a Publix bag and walk out and keep the suitcase in my trunk.
Wow. So, yeah, because when she's out of town, the cat still has to eat. And if she leaves overnight, she has to leave food.
But she's better off.
Water, he has the food. My neighbor will come in, and you know what, he'll see me. He watches me when I leave to go to work, which I'm only gone for like 6 hours. Back home, he looks by the window when I come in. Meow, meow, meow. He's all over me.
How about if you were to board the kitty? There's plenty of wonderful boarding facilities.
I know too many people that, no, I'm afraid he'll bite somebody.
You can have a cat sitter come in and put the food down.
He won't even let my son go near him.
I know several cat sitters that cat would not have a problem with.
There's a lady near where I practice, Josie's Country Cat House. She is the most amazing woman with cats I've ever met. And she would handle cats far more ferocious than your kitty. And she would make them feel like they were in heaven. And make your time away a treat for your kitty, too.
Yeah, I mean, even when I was in the hospital, I came home, all hell broke loose. And I'm not talking to you.
I feel like click and clack.
I know. Well, Rosemarie,
I'll tell you what, immediately, Rosemarie, look, at the very least, you can get a little sardine or something that the cat likes, a higher value treat. And every time you come in, give the cat a little higher value treat. So have the cat change their perception of whenever you come back in the house, it should be something good. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
That's a good idea.
You're welcome.
Okay, you too.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
And we'll move right along to Tom in Miami. Thanks for your patience, Tom. You've been on a long time. Hi.
Hi, this is Tom in Miami. My wife and I feed a colony of feral animals, and occasionally when we see one that's been injured, we'll go ahead and take it, and we get the injury repaired, take it into our home, keep it until it's healthy enough, and then hopefully try to find it a permanent home. Unfortunately, it's my home that tends to be the permanent home. My wife now has found an animal that she's really fallen in love with. It's obvious the animal's been handled by people previously. And she's had the animal dewormed and tested, but it tested positively for FLV. Mm. She wants to bring the animal into our home and keep it with the rest of our adopted colony, I call it. But I'm concerned about the spread of the FLV to the other animals. She thinks she can keep them separated. I think it's impractical and can't really be done. My question is, all of my animals are in good health now. They're all adult animals. The youngest one I believe we have is about 3 years old. What's the level of risk for the FLV to the other animals? Is it a completely bad idea to bring that animal into the environment, or do you think it's something that we could manage?
The safest solution is to simply make sure all the cats that are indoors are vaccinated for feline leukemia, because anything less than that, you're taking a risk. It's true. Leukemia is not as contagious as airborne disease, but you're sharing the same living space, and there is a risk. But the vaccine's very effective, lasts a year, and there's today's vaccines 100% safe.
So a yearly vaccine for the animals would mean that it would be a possibility that we could do that.
Absolutely.
Thank you so very much for your answers. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
No worries. Okay. Take care.
Thank you. And Alyssa, quickly, because we're out of time.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I have a tiny problem with my cat. He keeps scratching the door every time I close it when I go to bed. So I've sort of given up and just let him sleep on my bed, but I really would like to
then
have
he
that
won.
Stop.
Well, I think you did the right thing, Alyssa, but I think Adele Mieta is going to disagree with me.
Yeah. So many people just adapt their life and parts of it and their household and everything. Yeah, in a situation like that, you don't want to...
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, you don't want to... You know, what happens is, in those cases, a lot of times people don't want to do what it takes to actually get the animal to stop that behavior. But in this case, if the cat is scratching on there, for one, more than likely it's because the cat wants to come in, so the last thing you want to do is let the cat come in when he does that. But I'll give you... you want to give the cat an alternative. So you might take a scratching post and put it right by that door where you're at, and perhaps even right in front where he would normally scratch. And try to see if that in itself gets the cat's frustration about being outside that door out. If it doesn't, and then the cat goes towards the door in itself, then from there you may have to open and close the door very quickly, very slightly, so that you don't catch the dog's paws on there. You might even put the scratching post right by the frame of the door so that the cat can't even get close to the frame of the door. And if he's scratching towards the middle of the door, then you can open and close the door real quick, and that vibration when his paws hit the door is usually something that's going to discourage them from doing it again.
Good advice. Thank you for calling.
Good luck, Alyssa.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we have time for. We want to let Victor Guillermo and you with the Chihuahua know that we sent your emails to Dr. K and Adele Mieta's, so they'll answer you, right?
Thank you, Bonnie.
Okay, so it's Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic. Ask Dr. K at sablechaseanimalclinic.com, and their website, sablechaseanimalclinic.com, and Adele Mieta's of Canine Advisors, canineadvisors.com, and Adele, E-D-E-L, at canineadvisors.com. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And that wraps up today's At Your Serve edition. Our lead producer is Richard Ives, associate producer Polly Landis, and technical supervision and online information produced by Paul Leary. Perhaps you missed some of today's broadcast. We can be found at the WLRN website, free downloads. More info, links, photos, and more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, it's live coverage of the Miami-Dade School Board meeting. Bonnie and I return Thursday with news about the famous Dash Institution of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. Of course, Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining Thursday also. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.